Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. We are celebrating our 100th episode, and in this two-part series, we're taking a look at Computex 2019. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay.
Welcome to the Ninja Lane Podcast for our 100th episode, Dennis.
100!
That's right. We've been doing this for a long time. I thought we'd celebrate a little bit just before we get to the meat of the article by sharing a little bit of trivia about the podcast.
All right. So did you know, here's a podcast trivia for you.
Bring it.
Did you know that there is technically an episode one?
A secret episode one.
Secret episode one. So the very first episode we recorded in November 2010, and it was so horrendous that I posted it, but did not actually make it public.
Ironically, that was the onus for us going out and buying some real gear. I think we recorded that with a webcam, didn't we?
Yeah, it was a Logitech C something something webcam, and we sat in front of my computer and basically talked, and that allowed it to record us. There was a lot of background pops and just really echoey tin can style sound.
I want to point out that for those of you that don't always listen to the podcast, I know you're out there, that episode clocked in at under 9 minutes. That's right.
What was it? 8 minutes and 27 seconds?
Yeah, you'd never know that we could make something that short and cover what we wanted to. What did we talk about? Do you remember?
Oh, we talked about NVIDIA video cards.
Yes, 580, 560?
Something like that. It was, I can't remember exactly. And then we also talked about some games.
Yes.
And then there was a big part of it that I was like, oh, we got to skip this. So I skipped over it. So, you know.
It does not exist.
Yeah. Maybe what? If you do like some crazy Google foo, you might be able to find it. Because I did link it in the Ninja Lane message forum back in the day.
Way back in the day. So, hey, that's kind of like an Easter egg if you could find that.
That's like 9 years ago.
9 years ago. How many episodes? So you would think we're in 100 episodes. We do a regular, add an extra every month. That's totally not true.
No, totally not true.
But we do try.
We do. And we have, according to iTunes, 170 episodes on iTunes right now as of this recording.
I know there are some of you that have endured 170 episodes, and I am so thankful.
I am too. We have to thank the listeners.
So thankful. But I do also feel sorry for you. I could not listen to us for 170 episodes.
Yeah, that's why you stopped editing.
You know, it is what it is.
Oh, other Easter egg.
Oh, give it.
So there was a time when I would send over all of the podcast episodes and Darren would edit them, add some fancy music to the front and the end, and remove all my ums and ahs and oh my goshes and the basically my verbal stammers.
For a while, it was like 2 days worth of work. It's bad. We've gotten so much better since then.
Yeah, Darren would always say that he would make me sound good. And I appreciate that.
I hope that's still true. And all of those older episodes have some really great music to them. But then we hooked up with Little People. Mm-hmm. And with a little bit of help from them and some permission, we settled into the intro and outro that you hear today. And you may not know this unless you've been paying attention, but they are the same song.
That is true. I often forget that sometimes because, you know, Little People, he mixes it up and it's chill music. It's awesome.
It is awesome. And I selected those because they sounded so different. So anyway, give them a listen. I know that maybe you have skipped the intro and outro, and give Little People a like for supporting us for so many episodes. But let's get started with the centennial episode of the Ninja Lane, now Hardware Asylum Podcast.
It seems appropriate that we would be talking about Computex because that is the one show that is 100% relevant to what Ninja Lane / Hardware Asylum has been doing for the past forever.
So I know we do this episode every year, but there are always new folks joining us. So because that's our 100th episode, let's keep it simple. How long have you been going?
Like 15 years.
15 years. Wow, it's amazing.
Yeah, my first trek to the grand state of Taiwan, which isn't really a state, it's more like a province, an entire country, depending on who you talk to.
Right.
In 2003, right after the SARS outbreak. The year that they, because they normally have it in June. SARS broke out in June, and then they postponed it to September. And then I was able to sneak in and get in to see the show in September, and the site exploded because nobody else was able to go. I was like one of the few media outlets that had attended Computex.
Now, there's been a lot of change since then, though.
There has. Back in 2003, the Computex show was a sales-oriented show. So the booths were relatively small. The only reason that they got big was because the company had a lot of products to show. They usually had two floors as well. So you had the main show floor. I'm going to say show a lot. But the main floor where all of the products were on display, and that was for just people passing by. And then if you were there as a salesman or a media outlet, you would get to go upstairs and talk to your representative, and you could work out sample allocations, you could talk out special pricing. The idea was that you did all of your business there at the show. That was the purpose of Computex. Nowadays, you know, fast forward 10, 12 years, it has really turned into more of this, for the lack of another term, kind of a branding acknowledgement.
Oh, no, that doesn't sound so good.
Yeah, so, you know, when we go to CES, the booths on the CES show floor were basically just kind of big marketing billboards.
Yeah.
You know, we go to Intel, and they were talking about all the Intel technologies and how Intel was embedded, but they didn't really talk about the tech behind Intel. It was all, some people are walking by, hey, Intel, they have this, and they have that, and they have this. You go by Samsung, and they do the exact same thing. They don't really have the technology there. They have maybe a few products on display, but it's mostly big marketing messages and what it is that they want to talk about. A lot of the larger companies that exhibit at Computex are following that same model. A good example would be G-Skill. G-Skill has the overclocking stage, or the OC stage.
Right.
It's pretty awesome. They go and have an open qualifier. The top 8 or 9 competitors get an invite so that they can compete on the world stage. And then during the 5 days of Computex, they are doing an overclocking competition. Process of elimination on the last day, 3 people get to compete for the grand prize. This year it was 10 grand. It's
wow.
Actually a really big deal.
Now, I think that is a big deal. Now, people should remember that this is overclocking in its evolved state. Back in the day, yeah, there were not cash prizes. You'd win equipment. Mm-hmm. If you were lucky, you get paid to go compete. And those were only just the top maybe 1%.
Exactly. Speaking of the top 1%, every day they invite another manufacturer to go and have their overclocking person, you know, their in-house overclocker, right, go and display on the stage. One day, Kingpin and Tin from EVGA come in, and they're demonstrating their latest motherboard with Kingpin video cards, and he had a GPU heater. So last year he introduced the CPU heater, and it was a heater that went underneath the motherboard to keep the CPU warm, or the PCB warm, and so that the CPU could be cold. That way you get more stable overclocks. The same applies to a video card. And this year he was showing a heater on the back of a GPU, and he was running them in SLI because that's what Kingpin does.
Oh, yeah.
Asus was there with the Dominus Extreme doing a massive overclock using the Dominus Extreme. It was like 6.8 or some gigahertz or whatever.
Yeah, that's an impressive build.
Yeah, and it's a very expensive build. So that is how G-Skill goes and says, well, we have this attraction for people to come by, and while they're there, maybe they'll go and see some of the other stuff that's going on. Around the corner was a whole bunch of case mods. And I mind you, all these builds feature G-Skill products.
Well, yeah, because they're sponsoring. I get that.
Yeah, so it's G-Skill memory, G-Skill keyboards, mice, and stuff like that. The builds around the corner all had G-Skill memory in them. This was pretty funny. You go around the corner from the OC stage, they actually had a beer dispensary that was cooled with liquid nitrogen.
Nice.
Yeah, so I thought that was actually...
We could have done something like that lately. I don't know.
Yeah, you have to check the video for that one.
Fair enough. I want to ask you a question. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
CES, better, worse, different?
From Computex?
Yeah.
It is completely different. I'm going to just go out on a limb and say CES is its own show.
Okay.
It's the Consumer Electronics Show.
Well, yeah.
When I first started going to CES, you would see Asus, you would see MSI, you would see Cooler Master all on the show floor. They're not there anymore. There's no presence of those companies on the show floor anymore.
Oh, I know where you're going with this. The CES sideshow, which we talk about a lot.
We talk about that one. It annoys the heck out of me. But, and I call it the cloak and dagger stuff now. But all of those companies have no reason to be at CES anymore. And the idea is that if they want to have people, they take advantage of people being in town for CES. So they go and invite them to their suites, their hotels, or, you know, to Caesars to go and see all the Gigabyte stuff or
but
whatever.
But that's different in Taiwan, is it?
It is, because it is actually somewhat frowned upon. However, Gigabyte's been able to get away with it. I'm not sure exactly how, but I have a theory. We can talk about that.
Okay.
For the most part, the Computex show is all encased into two main buildings. This year it was Nongong 1 and Nongong 2, and that was a new building that got built across the street. Before that, it was Nongong and the World Trade Center, which was right next to the Grand Hyatt. The Grand Hyatt handled a lot of overflows for the companies like EVGA, for instance. They have a hotel suite at the Hyatt. You know, they don't need to have a big booth. The Hyatt is a little bit cheaper, and then you get a more private space where you can talk about stuff. That's their reason behind that. But you can't have an ASUS in the Grand Hyatt, for instance, because ASUS in Taiwan is huge. So they actually have like five different booths all scattered around.
Right.
And it's all based off of what it is that they're displaying. So they might be displaying their server stuff. That's actually in a different hall. They have their consumer stuff. That's in a different hall. They have, you know, the sales stuff. That's actually in a different location. So all this stuff is spread out based off of the person or persons they're going to be talking to. I mentioned Gigabyte. Gigabyte has never really had a show on the floor. In the past, they would have a booth in the World Trade Center, which is right next to Taipei 101, but they had all of the media stuff at Taipei 101 on the 36th floor or something like that. And that was always separated. This year, since none of them could be in the Taipei 101 area unless you did esports, supposedly, they picked a banquet hall that was right next to Nongong 2 and then invited everybody over there to go and see the Gigabyte stuff. And then when you get there, you have to be on the list, you get a badge, and then you're allowed in to go and see stuff. And I started thinking about that. It's like, why all the cloak and dagger? Well, back in like 2005, I was meeting with my DFI guy, and the motherboards, every one of the motherboards that they had on display, and this was the height of DFI and the LAN party series, right?
Oh, yeah.
None of the motherboards had a heatsink solution on the board. And I said, why no heatsink? And said, oh, well, so we can show off the board better. And then I said, that's not why.
All right.
And he goes, we don't want anyone to come by and steal our heatsink design, because they were working with Thermalright at the time. And they were doing one-off designs that were really high performance for their motherboards. But they didn't want any of the industrial espionage to happen to come by and say, hey, we like that cooler design. Let's find out who built it and have them build us one just like it.
How interesting.
By Gigabyte having this invite only somewhere else, they remove all of that sort of espionage that could ever possibly happen. And they get it removed from the actual show floor so they can have private conversations, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I have to admit, without, you know, naming any names, that there have been a lot of companies that have made their money off of copying other companies.
Yeah, and you can tell when they can get the scoop on it, either at the manufacturer or somebody within the company, because they release something at that same time. I think one of the best examples would be the separated audio channel on motherboards that was backlit. That all came out at the exact same time, and it's like,
how did everybody know?
Yeah, right. It's like, did you compare notes, or was somebody saying, oh, hey, this company's doing that, we should do it too, and then just add it?
Well, you know, as much as I hate that espionage, it does drive the technology in a good way.
It does.
Sadly.
But the show in general is, it's really become more of this branding sort of thing. Another good example is Zotac. Zotac had a esports gaming booth. Okay, and we saw Zotac at CES. And
oh, yeah.
What did they have on display? A video card and the mechs. The mechs were just these basic computers. At the esports event, they were doing this all for charity. They invited some top-tier esports players, and they even did some of them online. There was a girl from Canada that got voted to attend.
Girl needs more girl gamers, that's for sure.
I know. And then when they had it set up, it was the gamers were behind a veil, and they had a camera on them, and then their picture got pushed out onto the screen in front. So you didn't actually get to see the gamer directly. You got to see a picture of the gamer.
Okay.
And they were all playing on mech minis, those little tiny boxes.
Yeah.
And they were playing League on those games or on those little computers.
Well, that's a pretty solid advertisement because we tend to dismiss those little boxes.
Exactly. And they were doing that live in front of an audience. The thing was, the people that are attending Computex are not the same people that attend CES.
Oh, yeah.
Not everybody is into esports. I know it's huge in Taiwan. It's huge in all of Asia. So you're going to get the media outlets that are going to pay attention. But when I was looking around, they only had 5 rows of seating. And never were any of those seats filled up.
Interesting.
So it seemed like, yeah, you can do esports stuff. You can do a great recommend saying you can game high quality games on this tiny machine, which also makes building a PC kind of a bit sad.
Yeah.
But it went out to the wrong audience. But the idea for Zotac was that they wanted brand recognition. They wanted people to pay attention to what it was that they were doing, and sure, that was their attraction.
Well, and they're driving the message. And to be fair, you don't need a live audience to drive the message. You just need coverage.
Exactly. And to that point, Computex themselves, they brought up G-Skill and Zotac in the official press release at the end of Computex saying, this is what happened. We set world records. We gave away 10 grand. We had esports playing for charity, and this was how much they won for the different charities. They had all that stuff listed in the official press release at the end. No other companies were mentioned in the end press release aside from this is how many people exhibited, this is how many people attended. We did this. That was it.
Well, there you go. They're getting their return on investment right there. That's a lot of press.
Yeah. And that, I think that is where Computex is going, which kind of removes it from the way that it was. And for a person like me that goes to Computex to make contacts, it makes it more difficult.
I get that. Well, I think that's an interesting perspective on how things have changed over the years. But I think we would be doing our readers a favor and our listeners too if we talked more specifically about some of the cool stuff you saw.
Yeah, we need to get to the products.
Let's go back to a more traditional. Now, I have your schedule in front of me, and you spent quite a few days out here, but I think I'm just going to roll through these and kind of try to hit some of the highlights.
Yeah, and if there's a picture to post, I will post it in the show notes. So be sure to go to hardwareasylum.com. and check them out.
I have to admit, this is one of my favorite things, to go and see these pictures after we talk about these. And we'll work through these real time as we go through this. Well, let's start with AMD then. So first day.
First day, yes.
You dove right into the AMD keynote. Now, AMD got a lot of press. Now, as a non-attendee, this was the first thing that I heard about the show.
Yeah, and it was part of the opening ceremony. Computex has always had an opening ceremony. This is the first time they called the opening ceremony a keynote. Partially because they had Dr. Lisa Su from AMD presenting at the show.
Now, I know there was a pretty big reveal because it was all over the news. So maybe we should just start there.
Yeah. So Zen 2, the second generation of the Ryzen CPU, the consumer level CPU, was released.
Now, this wasn't exactly the best kept secret, to be fair.
No, it was not. We had actually even speculated it on the previous podcast. I'm not going to link to that one because it'll take me forever to find it.
Right, right.
But Ryzen was slow. It's first generation. Ryzen 2, or the third generation of it, PCI Express 4, and faster instructions per clock, which is important because that is where Intel's money and power is.
Well, I have to admit that this reminds me a lot about what we used to talk about with Intel, and that is the TikTok cycle. Mm-hmm. This really feels like they've taken Ryzen and talked it, I guess.
Yes, and in the best yes possible, that is exactly what has happened. And it is a good thing because we have faster PCI Express. That increases your video to CPU interaction, that much, much faster there. It also increases SSDs. So you got your M.2 drive in there. Now you can get, what is it, 5 or 7 gigabits per second theoretical speed off of PCI Express 4.
That's pretty big.
It's insane. And the big one is the icing on the cake was the Ryzen 3, the third generation, 12-core at $600 compared against a 12-core Intel, which was $1,200.
That's pretty big.
AMD was faster.
Wow, that just takes me back to the Athlon days.
Yep.
I'm kind of excited to see it. And that's not even the big boy. You barely even mentioned the big boy.
Yeah, what was it today, the day that we recorded this podcast, AMD released the 16-core version. And we knew that that was coming because cores. The Zen stuff is basically, we can add as many cores as we want.
We've been talking a lot about that scalable architecture, and I wonder if the demand is there, because 16, what's next, 24? I mean, we have a great opportunity to go multi-core. Now, is the software keeping up? Not really yet, but this is, as we've mentioned so many times over the last year, really one of those moments in history where the hardware is so much ahead of the software, and that's a really good thing.
Yeah, it's really where it has to be. And speaking of, Dr. Lisa Su, and I'm going to try to post the video on this one because I took a video from the press conference.
Right.
She went down the line from 2000 until now and talked about all of the AMD firsts.
Yes.
And I forgot about that until she brought it up. It's like AMD was the first to break the gigahertz barrier. That was with Athlon XP.
Pretty huge. I remember those.
And they were the first to have the 64-bit processor. That was Athlon 64. And it seemed like a month later, Intel silently says, yeah, we support 64-bit extensions. They fast forward to the end. They had the first 32-core, the Threadripper, basically. High-end desktop CPU. They were the first to do that. They were also the first to have like a gigahertz GPU, which was their ATI acquisition.
Well, let's not forget that they are driving the console business. And in fact, if the rumors are correct, they'll be in the next generation PlayStation 5 and probably the next generation Xbox, which might be Xbox 2. Who knows?
Who knows what they're going to call that? They were also the first to have an APU, which I thought was just dumb. You know, APU, what is that? But they were the first to announce that, and they were the first to have it. Intel has since released a lot of the NUC stuff, which competes with that APU.
Right.
Intel has always kind of followed suit with what AMD has been doing, and that's a good thing. But hopefully now with the Zen 2 cores out, we will see a performance advantage to the point where AMD has the upper hand like they had back with the Athlon XP.
Absolutely. I mean, I miss that competition. I mean, it drives the industry and it drives the prices down, which only makes building PCs a little bit easier for us.
Yes.
All right, let's talk. So ASUS.
ASUS. Basically, the entire Computex was based off of the AMD release. So everybody had an AMD board to show.
So what's the chipset for that new AMD processor?
Oh, what is it? The X570.
Okay.
So it's fifth generation stuff. It's actually pretty cool. It supports the PCI Express 4. Just about everybody said, hey, well, we have an SSD that's available. You can get it from this company. Companies that did SSDs, hey, we have a Phison controlled SSD that supports PCI Express 4. Here's how fast it is.
So I'm sure ASUS is no exception.
Yep. ASUS, I was impressed that they were concentrating a lot on the X299 stuff.
Interesting.
They were releasing a new 30th anniversary, because this is 30th anniversary of ASUS.
Oh, wow.
Prime X299 edition. And it was pure white. It was something that you would totally love.
Oh, that just sounds amazing.
Yeah. And then, of course, they had a lot of the ROG boards and a lot of OLED stuff. And, you know, they're refreshing the X299 because there's new processors coming up.
Well, that makes sense because it supports the Ryzen. But I'm a little excited about the 25th anniversary. That is really a lot of longevity for this business. I mean, we've seen a lot of really great companies, DFI, for example, come and go. And ASUS has been driving for a long time. So that's really cool.
They're still one of the only companies that has a legit overclocking motherboard, too.
Yes, they do. But you pay for the privilege.
Yes.
However, they are frequently relatively easy to get in comparison to some of the other unicorns that we chase.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm looking at your schedule, and it looks like if we skip ahead a little bit, EVGA might be worth a mention.
EVGA, SR3.
SR3, that sounds like a car or something. What is SR3?
SR3 is, well, if we go back, SR3 is the third generation of the Super Record motherboards.
Oh, okay. Now it's ringing a bell.
So you remember the SR1 was a dual CPU Xeon-based overclocking motherboard that supported four-way SLI, dual processors, a lot of times you had to use three power supplies to get the most out of it.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. And that was before Intel locked down the Xeon processors to the point where you couldn't overclock them anymore.
Oh, those were the days. But we're kind of getting back there again with that new Dominator platform in the multi.
Yeah. So the SR3 is a LGA 3647. I think that's the number. I'm not going to quote myself because I just said it. Based CPU.
Very nice.
Six-channel memory. 56, I think, or 48 lanes of PCI Express.
Nice.
Off the CPU. And if you get the 28-core one with the X at the end, it is fully unlocked.
Wow, that sounds like the one to get for sure, but I'm a little scared of what it might cost.
Do you want to know?
Yeah, I guess I do.
$3,000.
Oh, brutal.
$3,000 for the CPU. And I'm showing Darren a picture of the SR3 right now. That is the socket. It is freaking huge.
Wow.
I say freaking because, you know, yeah. We can't say whatever.
It is the 100th episode after all.
Yeah. We have
now
here.
This is the EVGA SR3 dark motherboard. We've always loved the dark.
Mm-hmm. And the dark has all of the dark features. So it has the multi-layer PCB, the gold surround. We have onboard audio, which is high-end stuff. We have an onboard full-coverage water block to cool the VRMs, which are super
powerful. Oh, I'm so looking at that. I love it.
And the CPU at the bottom.
And I'm imagining there must be some beautiful RGB because why wouldn't you, right?
It's the dark. There's no RGB.
Oh, wow.
No RGB on the dark.
I have to admit, I'm kind of impressed.
The rotation. If you notice the rotation of the motherboard, it matches the dark 390.
Beautiful.
So the memory is above and below the CPU socket, which reminds me a lot of AMD stuff back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And they limited it only to one DIMM slot per channel, which is perfect for memory overclocking.
Nice.
This board is the epitome of the overclocking motherboard for this processor platform.
What do we think about availability, though?
It's supposed to be out in August.
Nice.
And I have already planted the seed saying, I want one.
I think that's not a bad decision because that thing looks like it can perform.
Yeah. Power-wise, we have one 24-pin socket, unlike the Dominator or the Dominus that had two 24-pin sockets.
Well, yeah.
This one has one, and then it has one, two, three, four 8-pin CPU sockets to power the CPU.
Interesting. But I like the way that they're going with that because that makes it a little bit easier. You just get a little bit bigger power supply up front. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about multi-power supply infrastructure.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about some crazy cooling because they got the cooling built in for the most part.
Yeah, the water cooling part of it. And if you don't get the 28-core one to save yourself some bucks, it may not be unlocked, but you can put that on there, water cool the entire thing, and have a super high-end build.
But you don't get RGB.
You don't get RGB?
I never thought I'd see the day where I missed RGB, but this board is sexy. Check out the pictures in our notes.
Yes. What's next?
Is that everything from EVGA? Because I feel like that's pretty impressive.
That's all I was going to talk about for them.
Well, let's talk about Fantex then. Now, we have always been fans of Fantex. So what did they have to show us this year?
They had the Enthu Luxi 2 prototype.
That's kind of a mouthful, but it's a good-looking case here.
Yeah, it's a full tower case, kind of beyond a full tower case.
Beyond?
It's a bit taller than the normal full tower case. It reminds me of some of the cases we had in college where there might have been 40 external hard drive bays.
Well, it's kind of interesting because we've talked a lot about the trend for smaller cases, so now I'm kind of intrigued.
Yeah, so this case is following suit with the Evolve Evo X. I think it was the Evo X. The Evolve X. Yeah, no Evo. Where they took an existing design and then amped it up to add more stuff. And in the Luxi 2, we have an area for an extended ATX motherboard at the top.
Nice.
Down below in this little chamber down here is where the power supply goes, and it's kind of sitting up vertical. That is sitting up vertical so that you can put a mini ITX motherboard there, and then you could see both systems in the case at the same time.
Through the tempered glass?
Through the tempered glass. Tempered glass is only on one side as well.
That's kind of bucking the trend, but I like it. At least the pictures of the prototype here.
Yeah. They have also kind of sampled a little bit from a Lan Li case, the DeBauer one, where we have fans that are flat on the same plane as the motherboard tray that pull air through. You have radiator positions at the bottom, radiator positions at the top, and radiator positions on those fans that are on the motherboard tray itself.
Very nice. I have to admit, I wouldn't mind building that, and I tend to be more of a three-window guy these days.
Yeah.
But it looks classy, and it looks like it breathes well, too.
Yeah, so the back of the case is fully vented. It's a steel panel, fully vented on those fans that were on the motherboard tray. And then there's a cutout, which has got tempered glass on it, that shows three SSDs, so you can have your RGB SSDs on full display.
Very nice. I know those are starting to get popular, especially in the enthusiast builds.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. So it looks like next is EK. Now, I have a little bit of a love affair with EK because they make the water blocks that I use for my custom builds.
Well, they are going full custom with their stuff now. So we have a water block that you can pick and choose what you want to have in it. So you know how you can go to EK.com and you can buy the nickel version of the CPU block, right?
So sexy.
Well, now you could actually say, I want to have a plexi top. I want to have a brass insert. I want to have a chrome mounting plate and then the copper bottom.
So completely custom.
Completely custom. You That's can assemble cool. it any way you want.
Wow. Total and you
can
custom.
Even have you can even have colors. So you can have the mounting plate as red. And then you could have the distribution plate block, you know, part in the middle as kind of chrome. And then you could even cover that up with an acetyl, or you can have a clear.
What? Really? That's pretty impressive.
It is super impressive. And the bottom of it, I got to see it. It's a super micro fin. So, yeah, the performance should be off the charts. Although it's going to be super, super restrictive from a water block perspective.
Well, yeah.
They also are doing a refresh on their fittings. So that now you can, there's a little cutout in the compression ring.
Okay.
So you can put a color ring between the base fitting and the compression ring to have color there. So you can have it any color you want. So you can have them red, blue, purple. And it's just a small little window and it's a small little detail.
I would have never thought of that. I'm kind of intrigued.
And it's kind of neat. It's very subtle though. And they had them for everything that they did a compression fitting for. So they did them for the hard line and the soft line, also around the reservoirs and stuff.
That might be a good excuse to rebuild a water cooling system. I don't know. We'll have to see. So next, I'm going to suggest that we went to Corsair. And it looks like, if I'm not mistaken, Corsair was also featuring some special water cooling stuff.
Yeah, so Corsair has their new Hydro Z or 2 or something like that. Corsair has always been one of these companies that has said, well, I guess they've taken the thermal take approach where it's like, we see something we like, and then we're going to try and improve it. Well, they have done that with the AIOs. They started with Coolit, and then they kind of created their own brand. I think Coolit still makes them.
I'm not sure. I miss Coolit. They were so much fun. The Peltiers.
Peltiers were awesome. Well, now they are doing a full DIY loop with the Clevit being, or Clevit, whichever that word is. You can go to the Corsair website. You can type in the Corsair case that you have. You can type in the system you have. And it will build you a shopping list of all of the water cooling components you need to buy from their Hydro 2 system to build a loop in your system.
So literally, put your custom together. It's nice to see that happening with more mainstream folks. I mean, not to bang on like EK and some of these custom sites like Frozit and stuff that we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
But this is really, to me, very exciting that you see mainstream manufacturers embracing the custom cooling loops.
Yeah, and it's Thermaltake has kind of done the same thing. They just have given you all the components and making the assumption that you know what you need to have. Corsair is going one step further saying, well, our consumers are idiots. Let's help them out and help sell stuff because they already have, I'm making the assumption, they already have our case. We want to help them cool it.
Well, it's a great plan. I mean, how often do we get questions on, well, what really do I need to build a water cooling loop?
Oh, every time.
It is so constant, especially when we show up with a pre-built loop at a LAN party or a demo.
Yeah. I bought this off the shelf. How? I knew what I was doing.
Well, yeah.
It's hard to actually convey that. It's like, well, I did the research. I know what I need to do.
But we've talked so often about that. If you are an enthusiast, you really owe it to yourself to build a custom water cooling loop at least once in your life. And they are somewhat high maintenance. But man, there is just nothing quite like it for looks and for performance.
And quiet. They're super quiet.
Well, it can be if you do it right.
Yeah, that's true. All right, what else we got?
I think it's time to round up episode one and put episode one in the book. So this will be the end of episode 100. So you will need to tune in for part two, coming soon on the Hardware Asylum podcast.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2019. Thanks for listening.